peach tree and hid himself as best he could. The Apache leader rode up to the tree as his men began herding the horses and cattle back down the valley and looked up at the terrified boy. Felix expected to be killed instantly, but instead the Apache laughed and motioned for him to climb down. Felix obliged. The Apache, who was called Beto, had a heavily scarred face that bore the imprint of some terrible battle in which he had lost an eye. Felix also had but one eye. The Apache pulled him onto the back of his pony, and off they galloped after the warriors. These Apaches were of the Aravaipa band, who lived to the northeast of the Sonoyta Valley. The Aravaipa would come to call the kidnapped boy Coyote, after their trickster god, because they could never decide if he was friend or foe. Years later, white men would name him Mickey Free. The boy's kidnapping started the final struggle for Apacheria, the longest war in the history of the United States. This conflict would leave a trail of blood from the Pecos River in Texas through New Mexico and Arizona and deep into Mexico from 1861 to 1886. All sides in that conflict blamed Mickey Free for starting it. In time, the boy would come to play a pivotal role in the war, moving back and forth between the harshly conflicted worlds of the Apache and the white invader, never really accepted by either, but invaluable to both. This is Mickey Free's story, but it is also the story of his contemporaries, both friend and foe, red and white, whose lives were shaped by the violent history of the desert and mountains of the American Southwest and northern Mexico. It was a land where every plant bore a barb, every insect a stinger, every bird a talon, every reptile a fang. An inhospitable, deadly environment known to the outside world as Apacheria. In this bleak and unforgiving world, the one-eyed, deeply scarred Mickey Free was at home. 1. Apacheria. Johnny Ward was not afraid of hard work. Born in Ireland in 1806, he had followed thousands of his brethren to America sometime in the 1840s. While many Irishmen took day labor jobs in the eastern cities, Ward pressed on to the far west in search of his fortune. The California gold fields proved barren of opportunity to him, so he drifted south to the Yuma Crossing and in 1857 appeared in Arizona's Santa Cruz Valley. He went on to the Sonoyta and took up a ranch, Charles Poston, the self-styled father of Arizona, remembered. Forming a temporary partnership with a Mexican woman, according to the customs of the country at that time. Poston also noted that she had a little boy who also appeared to be partly of Celtic descent, as he had a red head. The 1848 discovery of gold in California, the subsequent population explosion, and the admission of California to statehood in 1850 had made it increasingly urgent to establish overland mail and protected transportation routes to the West Coast. Sectional rivalry over which route a future transcontinental railroad might take flared hot in Washington. Secretary of War Jefferson Davis was determined that the railroad route was to be a southern one, and he, indeed, had logic, climate, and geography on his side. The problem for Davis and his political allies was that the controversial boundary established by the 1848 Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, the agreement that ended the Mexican War, had failed to secure the land south of Arizona's Gila River, land that Army explorers had reported as the most suitable route for a wagon road or a future railroad. James Gadsden, the American minister to Mexico, solved the problem when he secured this new territory from the shaky and corrupt regime of President Antonio López de Santa Anna. The infamous Mexican general faced a soaring national debt and a weak army.